evening and welcome to our visitors, welcome to our members, and welcome to the staff that have joined us tonight. Before we begin the meeting, I would like to recognize that we meet on unceded Willistaku territory in recognition of our work with our Indigenous partners. We have an agenda. If you have a look and see if you have any adjustments or additions to the agenda. Seeing none, of approval by consent. And the minutes from the previous meeting, I have one item, and that is on page 3, at the bottom of the page. Under committee request, it's a request that a member join the provincial curriculum and assessment committee.
If I could note as well, I had a look at the draft minutes beforehand, and I offered Carol some grammatical and odds and end changes too. So you could possibly see a few changes from some of the edits that I made to her as well. Nothing earth-shattering.
Anything else? Seeing nothing, with those changes, have approval by consent. Thank you. Our first item of business arising from the minutes will be our consideration of the recommendations from the Leo Hayes High School Catchment Area Review. First thing I need to know is whether you wish to address these recommendations individually or as one. I see two as one.
I prefer as one.
Okay. And will we have a motion coming forward from anyone? Jane?
Do I make it now? Okay.
We are.
So I would move that we would be accepting the 6 recommendations made by the superintendent with respect to the changes to the Leo Hayes High School catchment area.
Moved by Jane, seconded by Terry. And that's the 6 up to F, not including the last item on. All in favor of accepting the 6 recommendations, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded, nay. Motion is passed. I have nothing under new business for tonight, and no one had added anything to the agenda, so we're going to move right on into the superintendent monitoring reports. First one would be budgeting and forecasting for the 3rd quarter.
Thank you very much. We've prepared the second of four reports on budgeting and forecasting under ASDWEL4. And of course, Sean Tracy, as our Director of Finance and Administration, plays a lead role in this report. And I think it's probably just easiest and most beneficial to all at the table and in the audience to turn this over to Sean and allow him to work his way through the report on my behalf.
So for the third quarter report, we currently have a total redistributed budget of $211,515,332. And at this time, in the third quarter, we have forecasted a deficit of $65,098, which is approximately 0.03% of our total budget. The areas of concerns that contributed to this deficit are the replacement costs for supply teachers, bus drivers, custodians, and EAs, so increased use of sick time, as well as in the areas of bus operations. We have experienced fuel increases with diesel fuel this year compared to last, and also with our heating, fuel, and energy costs with a colder winter, and also increased pricing beyond what we're funded have contributed to our deficit. So what we're doing to address that, we did look in the area of our maintenance repair vehicle budget. We noticed an anomaly with the funding there, and we went back to the department and discovered that we were had a shortfall in funding. So we have had some conversations with them, and they're looking at making up a portion of that to us this year, so help with some of that. We're going to look at areas for operational efficiencies within our budget, so if there's any areas where we can reduce spending, we'll do so. Also, at the end of the day in March, if we do not have a zero or $100,000 surplus in our budget, we're required to balance our budget, and our contingency for doing that is by using our self-sustaining funds that we have held in Department 19, which equates to about $1.2 million total that we would have available to address any shortfalls if the need has arisen. So I feel that we're in a pretty good place. So if you look at this chart, it just shows the breakout of our expenses. Approximately 88% of our expenses are in salaries, our employees, and 12% in operations. And you can look, this slide here shows the breakdown of the individual buckets that we get our money in under the budget. So under instruction, $136 million, Ed Support Services, $13.7 million, Student Support Services, $9 million, Facilities, $20.8 million, Transportation, $12.4 million, District Operations, $5.6 million, Benefits, $13.3 million for our total of $211,515,32. And a couple times a year, we present to you your summary of your District Educational Council budget and expenses. So at the beginning of the year, fiscal year, we set a budget of $50,000 for the year. We've had total expenditures to date of $23,161.86, with a balance of $26,838 remaining. So the budget's sitting in a really good spot. And the last page is the actual third quarter summary, which shows the different areas that I told you that we had made up the budget. say, the program area. We have a budget there of $1.782 million, and we have a surplus there of $322. So you can see how different areas offset the deficits as a whole. At the end of the day, we have a deficit projected of $65,098. That's a relatively small deficit, and I'm hoping that will be flushed by March 31st. We have a number of things that have yet to come into our budgets. We had four different collective agreements that have been ratified this year. So we have a number of salary payments and transfers to come from central government for those salaries that will add budget dollars to our budget, as well as we've already, a lot of these payouts have already happened as well. So there's one area there I know under total education support services. You'll see there, there's like a negative expense of $2 million. Well, that's reflective of the fact that we're going to receive a transfer from central government for the settling of the QP 2745 agreement. So that's why it's reflected like that, in case anybody was wondering. So overall, I feel confident in where we are right now as a district, and I don't think we'll have any problem in balancing at year end. Any questions?
Chair. The CEO is just trying to get my mic on. Mark.
Just have a concern about the using sustaining funds for balancing the budget. I guess maybe the specific question is there funds we use out of our regular budget that self-sustaining funds would normally be used for? So you're in essence putting those funds back in the budget, or is this really to prop up the budget in a way? And if so, I guess my concern would be, you know, what would those self-sustaining funds typically be used for that we wouldn't be able to use them for if we're using them to potentially offset a budget? And that would be, you know, that would be a concern, I guess, that I know in the past we haven't, and you've done very well, your whole team is managing the budget, but I'd be very concerned about using self-sustaining funds.
Well, I will say that in the time that I have been in the budget world, which is 17 years, I've not had to use Department 19 dollars to balance a budget that I have been in charge of. But to answer your question specifically, since 2012, we've been focusing with the Department 19 dollars that were available to the districts, the prior districts, so District 14, 17, and 18. There was a pool of dollars that were available there, and we've been using that money to support a variety of different educational items for schools across our district, different projects and things. We have actually not used any of the accumulated surplus since we became Anglophone West from the areas that we secured Department 19 revenue from, which is cafeteria, international students, and rental of our school facilities. Those are the three primary areas. So we have a large surplus, was $1.2 million, which would have been as of last March. So our cumulative surplus is actually larger than that, because we'd have this year's revenue as well adding to that. So we traditionally would hold at least, you know, David and I have talked about this, at least a reserve of $1 million for emergencies. And the rest of it would be after the older district or Department 19 funds are expended. Then we would look at the way that we're going to spend current dollars, always keeping a safety net there in case, because ultimately I have to balance the budget, and the department requires us to present a balanced budget at the end of the day. I know in the past they have, a couple different times, they have made allowances for us for circumstances.
Sean, I think it's also worth noting that in our preparation of this report, in preparation for council, we also spent some time talking about like the $65,000 in the red is with us taking into account our forecasted expenses right to the end of March. So our forecasts are our conservative forecasts, and so that's another reason to not worry too much about the $65,000. There are still some stones left unturned in trying to balance that out. So I want to reiterate Sean's level of comfort in that I think it's okay. I don't think that projecting a $65,000 deficit in a $211 million budget with 2 months to go is a crisis by any means. It's I think it's well in place, and we still have a few stones left to turn if we were to run into a pinch there.
Hello. Questions for Sean? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Ask Sean if you do.
Sean, do we need a motion to approve your report?
Yes.
We don't go anywhere. We might not approve it. Do I hear a motion to approve Sean's report in the third quarter?
Oh.
Moved by Wallace, seconder. Seconded by Sean. I think there's something going on there. Sean, seconding Sean's report. Any questions? All in favor of approving the third quarter report, signify with aye.
Aye.
Contrary, nay. Thank you. Motion carried. So you're on again, Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you very much. First of two reports on ASDWEL6 called The Effective Use of Schools. I'll report again in May of 2017. Thanks to Sean, Philip Cliff, our facilities manager, and Janice Weber, the administrative assistant to the Director of Curriculum and Instruction, who manages a lot of the data that we'll see here. So as you know, this policy calls for me to keep you informed on any potential changes to program offerings or grade level configurations or boundary changes or changes to school facilities. And it also affords us an opportunity to talk about enrollment projections and functional capacity ratings. I can tell you that we currently have 69 schools in the Anglophone West School District. There are 13 schools in our district that house a total of 31 modular classrooms. You've probably heard modular classroom called a number of different things. Portable classroom is one common description. You can see that I've listed the 13 schools and the number of modular classrooms that add up to 31. Of course, our biggest is Leo Hayes High School, where there are 8 modular classrooms. We have a number of schools with 3 modular classrooms, including Gagetown School, Gibson Neal Memorial Elementary School, Liverpool Street Elementary, and Priestman Street Elementary. Now, each year there's a process where the Department of Education, on behalf of the Department of Transportation and Infrastructure, reaches out to us and asks for our needs for additional modular classrooms, as well as our potential to turn back modular classrooms. We presented to the department a need for 9 additional modular classrooms, with the biggest need at Nash Roxas Memorial Elementary School, a need of 3. And we have also identified 1 modular classroom that we could turn back to the system, and that comes from Gagetown School. Those decisions come from analysis by facilities, our facilities team taking into account enrollment projections, functional capacity, and in this particular year, a look ahead to the needs associated with introducing French immersion at the grade 1 level. So you can see that 1 modular classroom would be turned back from Gagetown School. In fact, I think that's a move, and I'll look to Sean or Philip. I believe 1 from Gagetown is actually going to Nash Roxas Memorial Elementary. Is that the plan, or does it happen that easily?
Yeah, that's the plan.
That's the plan. I can note that we had the consulting firm Ernst & Young to present a study on the Fredericton City Southside school demographics that occurred publicly in October 24th, 2016. And there were recommendations of 2 new schools that came from that report, 1 in the Hanwell area and 1 in the Skyline Acres neighborhood, that would result in replacing 3 schools, namely Kingsclear Elementary, Forest Hill Elementary, and Liverpool Street Elementary. This, of course, would help in the relief to high functional capacity ratings at 3 elementary schools in question. It's also recommended that a 3rd new school on Fredericton South Side be on the radar for the not too distant future, and also that the district explore the concept of a K-2 and 3-5 pairing catchment model for students at Connaught Street Elementary School and Montgomery Street Elementary School. I'll note that that you as a council had an immediate reaction to the report, and days afterwards asked for a revision to your major capital construction priority lists that were submitted to government in May, and you asked for the Hanwell School to be listed as a number 2 priority. The concept of K-2 and 3-5 from these recommendations, and not only Connaught Street and Montgomery Street, but there are other scenarios out there in our district could be explored in the future. I can tell you that we experienced some success with that model with 2 cohorts of schools in the town of Oromocto. So you've already given some quick thought to Hanwell. I say quick thought, it's something you've been thinking about for a long time, really, but now you brought it forward in a more official capacity, and that's clearly supported by the Ernst & Young study. In the near future, you'll want to think about as well the Skyline Acres neighborhood school idea. I can tell you that among our 69 schools, we have 103 combined classes, which is on par to last year. We also have 1 setting with multi-age classes throughout the school. These combined classes are found in 47 of the 61 schools that are not pure 9-12 high schools. We have 8 of those, by the way. Really, if you take a look at our 69 schools, you can see that we have 1 school that's K-1, that's Forest Hill Elementary, 3 schools that are K-2, 1 school that is 2-5, and 2 schools that are grades 3-5. The traditional elementary school, we K-5, we have 25, and you can see the number of schools we have in the K-8, K-12, 6-8, 6-12, and 9-12 configurations. If you slide ahead to Appendix A, you'll see a listing of those schools and their configurations. We do divide the schools into 3 education centers. Woodstock, Oromocto, and Fredericton, which is the former districts 17, 18, and 14. We have 35 schools in our K-12 system that have students who entered French immersion in either grade 1 or grade 3, so I'll call that early immersion. There are 16 schools in our 6-12 system that have students that are enrolled in late immersion or the grade 6 entry program. The 16 and 35, there's some overlap where schools actually host both programs. Of course, in beginning in 2017-18, you've heard about this already, the early French immersion program will return to grade 1. Staff are working hard to ensure a smooth transition to this provincial mandate. In September of 2016, we had 747 students who were enrolled in the grade 3 immersion program, which is the current entry point. Now, so that's about 43% of our grade 3 students. When we look at the numbers for this point of time, we have 550 students who have registered for grade 1 entry and 577 students who have registered for grade 3 entry in 2017-18. And that's about a 33.7% registration rate for early immersion. We anticipate that that percentage will continue to climb as we approach the September startup of school in, for 2017-18. In actual fact, we can announce formally the official enrollment for Anglophone West, which occurs on a date of September 30th. Our official enrollment this year is 22,901 students, which is up 27 students from last year. And so we buck the trend of enrollment decline that we see historically. And of course, we know that we welcomed a number of international students, which is my next bullet here. You can see that we registered 279 international students through our Newcomer Support Center in the period between August 22nd and January 23rd. And these 279 students come from 30 different countries. So we have quite a diverse population of students in cultural backgrounds in our district. Functional capacity rating, that's a percentage that describes the enrollment in comparison with available classroom space. We provide the functional capacity values for you in an appendix that follows. We generally say that functional capacity ratings less than 60% would suggest that there's available space in the building, and capacity ratings above 80% would suggest that the school is fairly full based on the space available. I can remind you that we had 4 sustainability studies last school year. One resulted in the closure of a school, a K-5 school, Millville Elementary, status quo in the other 3 scenarios. And then it's worth noting, of course, that we conducted a catchment review for Leo Hayes High School. The plan was confirmed in May of 2016, reviewed in the fall of 2016, with recommendations made and a final conclusion tonight. And of course, we now know that those recommendations will go through. It's fair to say that we continue to have interest by community stakeholders to make use of various schools in our district through reciprocal agreements and community use programs. And our facilities department will continue to monitor buildings in an effort to manage minor repairs and track possibilities for capital improvement projects. So if you look through at the appendices, it lists all of our schools and you can see the grade level configuration. So if it's elementary with the enrollment number and then grade out for middle and high, then you know it's a K-5, unless otherwise noted in the margin by the school name. So that's just a list of our 69 schools and grade configurations. You can see here next is how we, if you tilt your head sideways or I can turn it around, but basically it's a list again of our 69 schools and how they're divided by centers. And of course, each center has a staff that supports the functions of the center, both educationally and management-wise. And why don't I turn things around? You can see here the this is enrollment by center and by grade level and by program, and you can't really see it, but if you look at the report a little more closely and you make it bigger, you can see the numbers in grade levels and by center and by program. You can see the enrollment trend since 2008, where it's continually gone down, except for this year where we bucked the trend and we're up by 27. And this, rotate again, this chart shows the shows an enrollment history over the past 5 years for our 69 schools, 69 schools and more. So again, some interesting numbers where you can examine the enrollment history for any of the schools in our district. Functional capacity, this appendix, we start by giving some definitions. I really like to talk a little bit about functional capacity as a data piece, in that it provides information about how full the school is. So when we compare enrollment to space. But when it comes to functional capacity, and Philip and I have spent a lot of time together in the last week or so, there's a lot of interpretation that comes into play. So we look at these definitions, and we examine the floor maps. We try and make a count of what's called original classroom space, and we come up with a number. When it comes to functional capacity, we include classes that are designed, they're an average size space in the school that can be used as teaching space with a maximum allotment of students. They're designed as a homeroom classroom. So you can, some might argue, well, this could be called a classroom, and some might say, well, this isn't a classroom, which could make the functional capacity go either up or down. So I say all of this to let you know that the percentage that we get is not a 100%, this is the exact value. There's always some interpretation and some play, but it does give you a general idea of how full the school is. We need to take into account the maximum class size to help figure out the capacity factor. And then we go ahead and we do the calculation. So basically the calculation is as simple as this. We identify the number of classrooms. So I'll use Andover Elementary as an example. We identify the number of classrooms. We've identified it as 25. Someone else might look at the map and say, no, I think it's 24. Someone else might say, oh, I think it's 26. We've identified it as 25. You multiply the 25 by the factor that's described here in the definitions of a K-5 school. So 25 times 24 gives us 600, and then you would divide the enrollment by that capacity. So 285 divided by 600, yielding the functional capacity. This would be without modular classrooms. We've expanded our list a little bit this year because we have so many schools with modular classrooms, and sometimes it can be confusing when we give the functional capacity and trying to remember, is this with the modular classrooms or without the modular classrooms? So we decided to have additional columns to show the functional capacity, not only without the modular classrooms for all of our schools, but also the functional capacity with modular classrooms for those schools that have them. So here's a list of our 69 schools and the functional capacity of each. In my next report, I'll make reference to functional capacity again with when we talk about the sustainability studies in Provincial Policy 409. So that's my report on EL6. Yes, we're actually right in the middle of analyzing those numbers now, and our director team has set a meeting for next week where we can sort of try and reach a final conclusion on where those French immersion programs can be offered. So we anticipate in the next couple of weeks, because after we make our decision, we need to double check on a few things. We need to communicate with the department. We want to make sure we have it right. And then we need to communicate back with the school and the communities about how it'll work. But we're getting closer and closer.
The thing for the first year in us, David, you said one module classroom from Gagetown to National Access. Just to comment on that, I guess I was up in Gagetown, the SSC meeting last Thursday night. Seems to be a big concern with them and also the municipality, I guess the municipality government there. They had a wrap up that meeting. And also the Gagetown Rec Council. And they're really concerned that they're going to lose a modular that's actually housing their after school program. So I don't know if there's something that we can do as far as sitting down and discussing with them if there's other options, because as part of that meeting that night, they did give me floor plans, and they showed me, I mean, what the school is all being totally used for. I know our number shows that there's, I believe, 8 classrooms there, with plus 3 modulars. They have 7 classrooms, homeroom classrooms, not home. They also have an arts room. I believe another one is called a wellness health in Middle French. I believe it's taught in that room. And they also have another one, which is guidance and resource room. So, I mean, according to them, their room is, their school is full. And anyway, I'm not sure whether we need to still discuss that with them or how we can go about that. They were quite surprised to learn of this. I'm not sure. I think they got it through the grapevine somehow. Somebody was there taking measurements or something, but then officially they got the word. So, they weren't a happy bunch down there last Thursday night. So, I'm not sure if there's something we can do going ahead and sit down with them. And they're also concerned with the ISD teams coming out in the fall. And apparently they've been told that they have to have a designated room for that. And so, I mean, that's another one of their concerns, that they was actually planning on using this third module that they do the after-school programming. They was planning on putting that room aside for the ISD teams in the daytime. So just bring that concern over to you.
I can appreciate the concern. I know on an annual basis we need to examine all of our schools that have modular classrooms to make a determination if indeed this is a year that we can turn back. I know over the last few years Gagetown has always been on that list, and it sort of survived the movement of one. If you look at the functional capacity without the modular classrooms, it stands at 43.75%, and with the modular classrooms, it stands at 31.82%. So when our facilities team does an analysis, they take that into account, examine the floor plans. It's our feeling, and we feel pretty confident about it, that it is acceptable to move one of those modular classrooms. The numbers would suggest so. I know that when schools have extra space, it's valued space, and we'll always be able to find something to do with the space. My hope is that if the school is concerned, that that they reach out to us, that we can work with them to try and help with some planning to optimize the space that they have. I know that when it comes to the decision making, we go through our business, we submit our needs and our availability to the department. Then the department will confirm. I'll say department, meaning both education and DTI, and then we'll communicate back to the school. So I know that our team communicated with the school principal. So she was aware. But I know that schools love their space, but in this particular case, we really think that it's appropriate to remove one of those modular classrooms and move it to a school where there's a greater need, especially with the fact that we're looking for 9 in total.
I'm just wondering if we can, if facilities can actually reach out to them and see if we can come up with some kind of a compromise or something that maybe they can use. I mean, they've got a full classroom for resource and guidance. Maybe that can be divided into 2 or something like that.
And that's the type of thing that we can certainly do, and we can ask. I see facilities here tonight, actually, represented by the manager and Sean as the DFA. We can certainly reach out to the principal at Gagetown and have some conversations and try and help brainstorm ideas. At this point in time, I would probably suggest that one modular classroom still will go. I think we need to stick with that plan, but by all means, we can talk to Gagetown about optimizing space that's available to them.
I also heard a little bit from Gagetown, but I think Wallace expressed concerns adequately. I guess my concern in general would be around the whole media functional capacity, and I appreciate you taking the time to identify that. It just seems that it means different things to different people, even between your office sometimes and the department. It would be nice to nail something down. And it almost seems, and it reminded me when I heard about Gagetown and then hearing Wallace speaking, it almost seems like functional capacity means something different based on region as well. Like, for example, when I looked at the functional capacity of Gagetown, I mean, there seems to be lots of room there. But then I remember when we went to Nakata, and then I remember we went to Nakawik, and our staffs would tell us there's plenty of room, too much room, but certainly the operation would tell you that they're using their space effectively. And it's almost like rural areas, I don't want to say need more space, but they need more space in the sense they don't have infrastructure within the town, so there's other programs and different things. So my comments aren't directly related to Gagetown. It just would be nice for us, as a council, we're seeing numbers and we're saying the numbers make sense and this makes sense, and you're making decisions based on numbers and operation and practicality as well. It'd just be nice somehow if we had some sort of clarity. I mean, you've given as much as I think as you could. You've done well, even through the years. It just seems to mean something different in so many different cases, I guess, is my concern.
And I appreciate those comments, Mark. And actually, in my next report, when I talk about sustainability of schools, I'm going to bring up functional capacity again. And that's why I always like to preface it by saying that this is a number that offers some description, but I'll use the example of Leo Hayes High School, and I know how much attention we paid to Leo Hayes and the functional capacity, and we see here that the functional capacity without the modular classrooms is 102%, but with the modular classrooms, it's 89.44%. And Philip and I spent a lot of time looking at floor plans, and knowing that this was such an important piece of the puzzle in overall planning, and wanting to really, really be sure, I took the time on Saturday morning to grab the vice principal of the school, and he took me through the school, and we walked through the entire school, and I had him tell me exactly what each room is used for, and it was really eye-opening and quite a great adventure, really. But it's exactly what you're speaking about, Mark. It's the difference between seeing a number, because someone might look at 89.44% and say, you know, it's not that bad, and enrollment's on the decline. But if you were a fly on my shoulder walking the hallways on Saturday morning with the vice principal and listening to him describe the use of each room and seeing it, it's a whole different vantage point. And I know that we've experienced it. You've experienced that as a council when we do sustainability studies, because we always do a walkthrough of the building. So, excellent points.
Okay, one more.
Yes.
Thank you. That was a clarification I needed. Yes, Heather.
Something about this whole, the usage. When I look at the 10-year plan and the information about, you know, the focus on literacy, focus on numeracy, and interventions with students and so on and so forth. And then we talk about functionality of a building. And sometimes as a teacher, when you want to deliver those interventions, yes, we like to have them done within a classroom setting, but sometimes that intervention is such that it needs a quiet spot. And so that's what isn't necessarily portrayed in numbers. And that's a hard thing for schools to give up, because when I'm listening to Wallace talk about resource and guidance being in a room, and my first thought is, okay, interventions, but then how does the guidance counselor, I could see that room would need to be divided up at times, and that's usage. So too, as a school, losing one of those rooms that is used every day and has students in and out and in and out. And then thinking about everything in the 10-year plan and the focus on all of that, there seems to be a little bit of, I don't know, if we're going to want all these things going on that are in the 10-year plan, it says in there that we have to provide the resources, and sometimes that's space. So I think that's maybe, I know we can't do anything about it now, but I think that is something that's
Do we have any other comments? I don't know how many of you were catching the drift of Mark and Wallace's comment, but I just want to add mine. When I look at those numbers and I say, Gagetown, they could have 200 kids in that school and they only have 90 and they're crying about losing a module, but you can lose half the kids and not lose half the grades, half the classes. So we just have to keep that. And you're right, we saw that when we toured the schools. Okay. On again.
We're going to share because my battery's gone. So the next report is ASDW EL7, titled The Sustainability of Schools. And again, reported on twice a year. I appreciate the help of Sean Tracy and Philip Cliff with this report as well. This of course, is the report that aligns with Provincial Policy 409, Multi-Year School Infrastructure Planning, and our obligations as staff and council. And there are a series of steps and timelines regarding the process of studying the sustainability of a school, with Policy 409 being the guiding factor. To bring some closure, of course, since the last report, the DEC conducted 4 sustainability studies from May of 2015 to January of 2016, ending 1 year ago this month. Actually, one of those 4 started in June as opposed to May. And those studies included Burton Elementary, McAdam Elementary, Millville Elementary, and then the cluster of 3 Nakwik schools. The outcome were 3 scenarios, with the status quo and the closing of Millville Elementary School effective June 30th. At our May 2016 public DEC meeting, the council voted in favor of not conducting any sustainability studies. And by the way, this was the previous council. This wasn't necessarily you as a council. The rationale for this decision was due to the arrival of you as a new council that came into place on July 1st, following those May elections. The Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development of the day approved the request for exemption to study those schools that had been triggered. So I talk a little bit now, I use the word a triggered school, and Policy 409 calls for schools to be triggered for study if the enrollment is less than 100 students and or the functional capacity is less than 30%. So I'll show you an appendix that shows the enrollment and functional capacity for September 2016. It's actually the same one that we just finished. Now, traditionally, the department will provide us with a list of triggered schools for the year, and that comes in the spring, and that comes in preparation for the second report, EL7, under our planning cycle, which happens in May. So in May, DEC will hear about the triggered schools, may decide to request an exemption for conducting a sustainability of study on any of the triggered schools for a variety of different reasons, and the minister could approve that request for an exemption to study a triggered school. It should be noted that a school can be considered exempt without minister approval for up to 4 years following a sustainability study that resulted in the status quo. So I can tell you that we have the following schools, based on our September 2016 official enrollment number. These schools have less than 100 students. Burton Elementary School has 48. Doaketown Elementary School has 69. Gagetown School has 91. Kingsclear Elementary School has 68. McAdam Avenue Elementary School has 74. McAdam Elementary School has 66. And McAdam High School has 89. So when the department sends the list of trigger schools related to enrollment, then we anticipate that their numbers will be exact to our numbers, describing schools with less than 100 students. When it comes to the functional capacity, we may see a little bit of difference in what the department sends to us and what we have described in our functional capacity list. And again, that goes back to interpretation of the schools. We know it'll be in the same ballpark. When we look at our functional capacity list, those that are less than 30% include Chipman Elementary School, 29.69%, Chipman Forest Avenue School, 29.14%, Doaketown Elementary School at 28.75%, McAdam Elementary at 27.5%, McAdam High School at 23.61%, and Nakwik Middle School at 27.99%. This is where I describe the functional capacity, and I've already talked to you a little bit about that and interpretation. So I provide that information to you now as it stands, We will continue to, we'll watch for the report that the department would traditionally send to us in the spring. And then, of course, in my May report to you as a council, in alignment with the trigger process under policy 409 and our planning cycle, we'll formally consider those schools. There's nothing to preclude the council from launching a sustainability study at any time, and but according to our planning cycle, I present this information to you tonight, and we'll present it to you in a formal capacity as well in May. Two interesting, well, I'll say one more appendix, because we've already looked at the functional capacity, and I think you've asked some questions, and if you have anything further, you can. But I thought for the sake of completion, I would include it in this report. But because our Southside Schools study spoke specifically about Hanwell and the Skyline Acres scenarios, I wanted to provide you with a little bit of additional information regarding those schools that would be impacted, namely Kingsclear Elementary, Forest Hill Elementary, and Liverpool Elementary. And I guess you have have access to the reports. For the sake of those that are in the audience, I'll try and make it a little bit bigger here. I listed some categories. This isn't an exhaustive list. It's just a list that I thought would be of interest to you. Things like grade configurations, enrollment history, classrooms, some out-of-zone school, catchment area, functional capacities, some information about the buildings with respect to construction and the size, and some operational costs, as well as some capital improvement information. So I wanted to give you that information about Kingsclear, about Forest Hill, and about Liverpool, because if it gets to a point where you want to examine, you've already started the process for Hanwell, and at some point I'm sure you'll give some consideration to the second recommendation of Skyline Acres, these three schools, you'll need to talk about them in greater detail. So that there may be some questions or that you have specific about these three schools or the report in general.
So in light of what's coming down the pipe and in light of this information, I guess we need to get started, and it seems a simple enough process that maybe I would like to have the council entertain a motion to begin a sustainability study on Kingsclear Elementary School. As we have already promoted and approved the Hanwell situation, in order to move kids around and in order to accommodate all of those things, these things would all have to be done in the future at some point. So this would probably be a good time to do that one school, get the new council familiar with sustainability studies. The superintendent will come up with the three options that follow along in policy 409, which would be status quo, closure, or another alternative. So I guess it's time, and I would like to make that motion.
So I hear Jane moving a sustainability study on Kingsclear School. Do I have a second there? Second to Bashan. Comments? Questions?
I would like to say that the last time I was at
Mike.
Yes. I just would like to say that there is something to be said for this smaller school model. At their last meeting, I was presented with their assessment results, and they did very well based on student teacher
the whole point of a sustainability study is just that. We're studying the sustainability, not the closure of a building. So the sustainability study gives the school population, community population, an opportunity to point those things out to us that that might be reasons why we might want to keep that building open. Question called. Any final comments? Anyone still thinking? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor of doing a sustainability study on King's Clear School beginning now?
Yes.
Signify with saying aye. Contrary minded? Motion is passed. And now we have to adjust our schedule. We'll wait for people to return who might be going away for a week or two.
Thank you. If it's okay with the council, what I will do is tomorrow write to the parents of King's Clear Elementary, and something tells me that the Daily Gleaner will get to them first, but I'll still follow process and write to them tomorrow, and I will look ahead to the next 3 months or so and see if I can map out an appropriate timeline, present it to you early next week, and ask for your approval of a timeline that we could announce publicly. The main requirement in the sustainability study is to have 3 public meetings. So the first public meeting is a presentation of facts. And that's one that I shoulder mostly with the support of a team, where I do most of the talking and I present to the public the facts about King's Clear Elementary School. The second public meeting is one where I get to listen a little bit, and that's where the stakeholders from the community conduct the presentations. In both cases, I'm presenting to you, and they're presenting to you, as well as the public. The third public meeting is where we need to make a decision on one of 3 outcomes: the status quo, the request to the minister for an investment in the school, or the request to the minister to close the school. So the status quo doesn't require for the minister to make any approval or not. If it's status quo, it's status quo, and you make that decision. If it's an decision to invest in the school or a decision to close the school, then we require the minister to approve. According to Policy 409, the minister is supposed to make that decision in no less than 30 days and no more than 60 days. So if we subdivide the topic of school closure, one of the things that you as a council will need to think about is, do you mean school closure related to building Hanwell School, or do you mean school closure related to closing the school right now and sending the students elsewhere? And I'm not asking you that question now to answer, but that's just something that we would need to think about as the process moves along. I would like to suggest, because our May public meeting is May 18th, that in case of a scenario of school closure, it doesn't give a lot of time, that we look to reach a conclusion in public as a single topic and part of our working session earlier in May. So I put that out there for your thoughts, and I'm going to put some dates together to present to you early next week so that we can land on those. But I wanted to put that out there in case there were any comments or questions.
Seeing none, do we have any comments or questions on the topic of sustainability of schools?
Yeah, I have a comment. All this talking has gone on, and we've kind of not addressed the north side issue, the elementary schools on the north side. So I wonder, David, if you would comment a little bit on that. We had some mention in the past about the potential study of the situation and where it's going.
Yes, that's a great point. So we had a very official study done by Ernst & Young for the south side of the city. We talked a lot about, I say we, the facilities, transportation, a lot of those folks that fall under Sean's umbrella under facilities and administration, and we talked specifically about the north side and direction, because we know that it's something of interest to you. And Sean, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, and please do correct me. I'm not offended at all. But it seems to me that the last we spoke, your team would like to have a crack at conducting that study as opposed to securing an outside source. Is that right?
Correct.
So
how much?
Yeah. Do you have a price tag on that, Sean? Yes. I remember having that conversation. We didn't put a timeline on it. I think it's something that we would need to map out. But when I think about the contributions that that our team made to the Ernst & Young, I was really pleased when we talked about it a month or two ago, and they came forward and said, you know what, I think we can do this. I think we can conduct this study. So I guess to answer your question, Jane, yes, we would have it on the radar, and our team would like to do it. I guess we haven't mapped out a timeline as of yet. If we're going to engage in a sustainability study, I'd like to suggest that the timeline not start right away, but we can look ahead to the future.
Well,
I guess my only question is, what the north side school study, being a new counselor, which schools does that affect? I mean, which schools would we talk about?
The reference that I'm making would be the schools in the Nashua Access area, the Nashua Access Memorial, Park Streets, Cadden Avenue, and Royal Road. That's that kind of circle of schools in the Nashua Access area. Is that right, David?
That's right. So if we look at some of those schools on the north side, Royal Road Elementary, 405 students, 88.8% functional capacity. Park Street, 408 students, 80.95% functional capacity. Nassis Memorial, 280 students, 83.33 functional capacity. But note, we had a need to add three modular classrooms. McAdam Avenue is sort of a bit of an anomaly in that it's a very small school with 74 kids and a functional capacity of 34.26%. But if you look at the other end of the spectrum, Gibson Neal has 615 students, which is an enrollment climb of close to 100 students over the last 5 years, and a functional capacity of 98.56% without the modulars. Three modulars there in place already, plus the addition, and the number escapes me now. Don't have my glasses, Sean.
Two
for this summer. So those are sort of the elementary schools. Barker's Point is an elementary school on the north side as well.
Same topic, Mark?
Yeah. No, you had mentioned your team doing a sustainability study. Just called.
No, not a sustainability study.
Yeah, you had mentioned that, and I thought it was. I didn't think you had meant a traditional.
Correct. They'll they will help with the Kingsclear sustainability study.
Yeah, but not the north side.
No.
Well, think of something catchy like Ernst & Young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tracy and Cliff.
Sean Bill.
LNCJ.
Three Stooges.
I didn't say that.
And do we have any more comments on the sustainability report or questions? John's saying, no, move on. So, we're on to the public, and I think...
No, correspondence.
Oh, sorry, I have no correspondence. Do you have any correspondence?
No.
So, on to public comment. We have a member of the public. Are you wanting to comment?
Don't strain your neck.
I think Jane Bush is still on the floor. You haven't voted on it yet.
On what?
For what?
The sustainability study of Kingsclear.
Yes, we did.
Oh, yeah, we passed
yeah.
it.
Yeah, we voted.
We had one contrary vote. That's all I remember.
I must have slept through that.
You must have. Yeah. That's disappointing.
I know. I actually have a question. With the other reports done tonight, EL6 and EL7, but they made available on the website.
When do they go up, Carol?
They can go up by tomorrow, lunchtime.
Yeah, within a day or two.
Yeah. Within a day or two.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. Thanks.
No public over there, right? And you can see bodies, a few heads. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so our next public meeting will be at the center again. We'll move back into smaller quarters and fewer lights and room for everyone here.
Madam Chair, I'm going to adjourn.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see how it goes. I haven't come to the clock yet.
Board meeting, Jane guessed we would finish at 8:07, and she's way off.
Well, we finished at 7:47.